HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Green blessings. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the Wise Woman tradition and the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, welcoming you to HealthyLife.net. Thanks for tuning in for another hour of green blessings from the green heart of Susan Weed to you. I read more than 100 periodicals every month, from the strictly scientific all the way out to the edgy fringes, looking for the best, most reliable, most inclusive, and most up-to-date information just for you, so you can maintain and regain optimum joyous health. Join me each and every month for wise advice on herbs and health with a special emphasis on women. Together we will reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and reclaim herbal medicine as people's medicine. December, here we are, the last month of the year, and we are going to be looking at one of those traditional holiday foods, sweet potatoes, minus the marshmallows. They are actually a top-notch food. We'll be talking lots more about that. And out of our kitchen cupboard, our kitchen cupboard medicine chest, we're going to look at ginger. I got a lot to say about ginger, as I'm sure you would expect. So let's get into our news notes. Hops is used in brewing beer. And hops leaves are discarded. The vines are pulled down, and they're mostly leaves, and the leaves have been, up until now, discarded. But it turns out that those leaves contain strongly antioxidants, proanthocyanidin compounds that counter cavities and gum disease. In fact, they prevent bacteria from sticking to the surfaces of the mouth and from releasing toxins. According to a report presented at the 2014 American Chemical Society meeting, they had found three new antioxidant compounds in hops and a fourth one that has never previously been seen at all before. In addition to these, hops contain other 20 other antioxidant compounds, and this is the leaf of the hops. Well, next year, I am going to be using my hop leaves, and I'll let you know how they work. Organic milk is more nutritious. Researchers examined nearly 400 samples of whole milk from both conventional and organic U.S. dairies to compare levels of omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. In today's typical Western diet, people consume about 15 times more omega-6s as omega-3s, and experts link that with a lot of chronic disease. Organic milk contains 62% more omega-3 fatty acids and 25% fewer omega-6 fatty acids than conventional milk. Is organic better? Yes. Is it more nutritious? Yes. Is it healthier? Yes. Stop taking antibiotics when you feel better? Yes. I know. You've heard it all the time. You're given a course of antibiotics, and you're supposed to take all your pills. This line of thought, this advice has been around for basically since the discovery of antibiotics 70 years ago. And the idea is that if you stop taking your antibiotic when you feel better, then it's going to let the bugs become resistant to the antibiotic. And also taking the whole regime of it is going to ensure that you get all of the bad stuff. Well, turns out that that's wrong on both counts, and that taking the full dose of antibiotics is actually what has been driving antibiotic resistance, and that we should slow down. The science is clear, says infectious disease specialist Brad Spellberg of the L.A. Biomedical Research Institute. Every study that has been done comparing longer versus shorter antibiotic therapy has found shorter therapy to be just as effective. A few days of taking antibiotics is usually enough to knock the infection on their heels. Then don't take the antibiotic, which allows the patient's immune system to come in and mop it up. Taking the full course of antibiotic, waste medicine, and more drugs translates to increased evolutionary pressure on harmless bacteria in our bodies. Those good bugs now develop drug-resistant genes and then pass those on to the bad bugs. Ay, 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 ay. In essence, if you are taking extra antibiotics beyond what you really need, you are doing the worst bugs dirty work for them. The issue of continuing therapy until all doses are done is now old hat. There's no data to support it. You simply cannot make a cured patient any better. And I really like this one. Sunbathing boosts endorphins in the body and the brain. Ultraviolet light causes us to churn out an opiate-like molecule called beta-endorphin. Alright, and as beta endorphin levels rise, it's our ability to withstand pain. What's more, we get hooked on high levels of beta endorphin and actually show signs of withdrawal, such as trembling, teeth chattering, and shaking like wet dogs. Well, I'm sure you've already guessed that although this is true of humans, we've only studied it in mice and we haven't really seen that in humans. So, think about it. Why people do seem to be addicted to tanning. This is Susan Weed here at Delta Life, and I'll be right back with sweet news about sweet potatoes.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Green blessings from Susan Weed to you here at HealthyLife.net. Want some sweet nutrition? Go for a sweet potato. You know, it's the kind of food that you can just eat right like it is. What is it about sweet potatoes? They are just so good. Often served during the holidays because that's when they're in season. Sweet potatoes are native to Central and South America and are quite possibly one of the oldest vegetables known to human beings. They have been consumed since prehistoric times as evidenced by sweet potato relics dating back over 10,000 years that have been discovered in Peruvian caves. Christopher Columbus said yum yum to sweet potatoes, and he brought them back to the New World. That was it. That was one of the very first crops that he brought back. 100 years later, Spanish explorers spread sweet potatoes to Africa, India, Indonesia, and Southern Asia. And that was it. Sweet potato had conquered the world. I make a wonderful sweet potato peanut butter soup here, which is a traditional African dish. And I often have to laugh because the three major ingredients are peanuts, which are native to North America, sweet potatoes, which are native to North America, and tomatoes, which are native to North America, and yet this is considered a traditional African dish. What I've had students actually from Africa, their only comment on it is very good, where's the meat? Because they only ever have had it before with meat. I, of course, make the vegetarian version of it. So sweet potato is now claimed by most cuisines and most cultures because there just about isn't anything that you can do wrong with sweet potato. About 100 million tons of sweet potato are grown annually here on planet Earth, and there's about 200 commonly eaten species, including 400 varieties. There are potatoes whose skin and flesh is almost white, creamy, yellow, orange, pink, and even deep purple. Sometimes sweet potatoes can be short and blocky with round ends, and other times they're long and have tapered ends. However, the one thing they aren't is yams. Sweet potatoes are sweet potatoes, and yams are yams, and you are for sure to be confused if you are buying your sweet potatoes in the United States. In U.S. groceries, assume that you are buying sweet potatoes. I don't care what it says. If it says yam, 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 it's a sweet potato you're buying. How can you tell the difference? If you don't like it when you eat it, it's a yam. Sweet potatoes are soft and have a fine texture and taste sweet, and yams have a kind of starchy texture and don't taste sweet. So you can really obviously tell the difference, but the word yam is used to refer to sweet potato in the United States. They really are not just different, but they're in totally different families. Sweet potato is the storage organ. It's not actually the root, but it's the storage organ of a plant that's in the morning glory family. Check that out. maybe there's something more than just tasting sweet. Maybe it really alters our minds as well. But true yam, Ipomiabatatos, is a root. And it's a plant that belongs to the Dioscoriaceae family, which is the yam family, preeminent among of which is the wild yam of birth control pill fame. And also, well, of course, there is this big obvious difference between sweet potatoes and yams. Sweet potatoes, also, they can get big. And I have seen some 3, 4, even 5 pound sweet potatoes. Nothing compared to yams. Yams can get 300, 400, 500 pounds. So, sweet potatoes. In reading, I discovered that there are purple sweet potatoes, and I'm really hoping that those purple sweet potatoes come to my local market, because I think they would be really interesting. The orange sweet potatoes, a medium sweet potato, is about 200 grams of stuff, and it's 180 calories, zero fat, and 7 grams of fiber, which is quite a lot of fiber, 4 grams of protein. It is loaded with carotenes and carotenoids. As a matter of fact, that one medium baked potato, mere 180 calories, gives you 214% of the vitamin A activity you need for a day, 52% of the vitamin C activity that you need for a day. That's right. A cooked food has vitamin C. As a matter of fact, 5 of the 10 foods highest in vitamin C are cooked foods, and especially potatoes, which behave somewhat erratically when they are cooked. By that I mean they actually make vitamin C. Sweet potatoes also contain vitamin E, and it's one of the few foods that contains vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E. In foods that are rich in any one of those, or foods that are rich in two of them, especially the combination of vitamin C and vitamin E, is very rare in a plant food. But these three antioxidant vitamins, A, C, and E, give sweet potato a real punch when it comes to keeping our eyes healthy and keeping our skin healthy as well. A single sweet potato gives you 50% of your daily need for manganese, 36% of your daily need of copper, 35% of your daily need of pantothenic acid, 34% of your daily need of vitamin B6, 29% of the biotin, 26% of the fiber, 19% of vitamin B3, 18% of vitamin B1, 16% of vitamin B2, 15% of the phosphorus you need, 10% of the potassium you need, as well as magnesium, choline, calcium, zinc, iron, small amounts of vitamin D, thiamine, riboflavin, folate, which is the naturally occurring form of folic acid, selenium, and iodine. Woo-hoo! I would say that sweet potato is one of the world's most nutrient-dense foods. And I like to push leafy greens. It's true. I'm a green kind of person. I like to get people drinking their nourishing herbal infusions. I like to get them eating their cooked leafy greens. But if I sense resistance, or somebody just is not going to be eating greens, and some people, for whatever their reasons are, aren't going to be doing that, then what I push instead is sweet potato. Look at all the nutrition that you get. Keep the skin on when you eat it. Eat that skin. Find some way to make it tasty. Maybe you eat your sweet potato without the butter, but you need some butter, but you don't put it on the sweet potato, you put it on the skin. And then you have a real reason. Ooh, yeah, I get that extra fat when I eat the skin. Good. Make it somehow tasty, auspicious, and wonderful to get the skin, because the skin is where most of the fiber is. And there's some important nutrients that are in the skin that we don't find usually in the flesh of the sweet potato. Even the leaves of sweet potatoes have been shown to provide important antioxidant benefits and are included cooked in soups in many cuisines around the world that have adopted the use of sweet potato. A minimum of 5 grams of fat in the meal with the sweet potato is really necessary in order to be sure that you get the good of the carotenes. Now, I have always just oiled my sweet potatoes, popped them in the oven, and baked them. Hey, taste seems good, no problem at all. But in reading that sweet potatoes, I came up with some fairly interesting information. When compared to roasting or baking, boiling sweet potatoes has been shown to have a more favorable impact on blood sugar regulation and to provide sweet potatoes with a lower glycemic index. The average glycemic index value for a roasted sweet potato was 82, for a baked sweet potato was 94, and for a boiled sweet potato was 46. Stir-frying. One study found that stir-frying sweet potatoes in oil enhances the bioavailability of their beta-carotene. When the sweet potato is cut quite small, 5 minutes of stir-frying are enough to liberate the beta-carotenes and make them bioavailable. Steaming. Recent studies show excellent preservation of sweet potato and anthocyanins with steaming. The impact of steaming is particularly interesting since 2 minutes into steaming, we find that peroxidase enzymes have been destroyed. Now, the raw food people would go boo hiss, but we're going hooray because peroxidase enzymes break down the antioxidants in the sweet potatoes so that you don't get them. So yet another reason to cook. And while you're waiting to cook your sweet potatoes, store them in a cool, dark, and well-ventilated place, not in the refrigerator. Sweet potato is one of the things that you just don't put in the refrigerator. It does strange things to it. The research I was looking at said the sweet potatoes will keep for 2 weeks. Well, come on. We know sweet potatoes are harvested in the fall and keep, if you can keep them, until the spring. So I always look for a sale on sweet potatoes sometime around this time of the year. And my local supermarket just had them at like 75% off. They were down from $1.25 a pound to 40 cents a pound. And buy a bunch and keep them cool. Why? Because sweet potatoes do so many different things. They may prevent and reverse some cancers, prevent and reverse type 2 diabetes. They certainly have a primary effect on cardiovascular health and do indeed reduce hypertension. Some books say, I think, because they're confusing them with yams, that they improve fertility. But as we said before, the real strong point of sweet potatoes is they really keep your eyes and your skin super, super heavy, healthy. Sweet potatoes are loaded with antioxidants, and sweet potatoes are anti-inflammatories. This makes them a superior part of the diet. Recent research has shown that sweet potatoes increase blood levels of adiponectin, and that adiponectin is produced by fat cells, and it is a modifier of insulin metabolism. People with poorly regulated insulin metabolism and insulin insensitivity have low levels of adiponectin, and eating sweet potatoes can build those levels up. Are there any problems with sweet potatoes? Well, they are among a very small number of foods that contain oxalates. They certainly don't have nearly as much as like spinach, Greek beet greens, or rhubarb, but they still have 40 milligrams per half cup. When oxalates become concentrated in the body, they can crystallize, connect to calcium, and cause kidney or even gallbladder problems. Oxalates may also slightly interfere with bone health. So we don't want to have a diet that's just sweet potato. The type of medicine that's very commonly prescribed for high blood pressure, beta blockers, can cause potassium levels to increase in the blood. And when that happens, then we actually have to watch out for foods that are high in potassium, and that's sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are an excellent source of potassium. Remember that you're getting 10% of your daily need for potassium from one regular-sized sweet potato. So basically, what can we say? Sweet potatoes are potent antioxidants, and they reduce inflammation throughout the body, but especially in the brain and nerve tissue. So we're also looking at sweet potatoes as a way to keep mentally sharp. Sweet potatoes also stimulate reduction in fibrinogen levels, and fibrinogen and fibrin trigger pro-inflammatory molecules, including cytokines and chemokines. Too much fibrin in the central nervous system is associated with the breakdown of the myelin sheath and poor functioning of the brain and the nerves. So let's hear it for sweet potatoes. Hooray! This is Susan Weed, and I'll be right back with 7 sneaky ways to see to it that you eat better.
Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
There's a scientist who has been spending his career and his life trying to figure out what will make you eat a better diet. It's just so well known among the medical community and even the alternative health community that asking people to change their diet is a lost cause. You might get people to do some little change here and there, but basically people are eating what they like to eat, and you are not going to have much into it. But Brian Wansink, Ph.D., has 7 tricky tips that could help you change what it is that you eat. Let's go through them and see if any of them could help you. The first one he calls, what would Batman eat? Now, it doesn't have to be Batman. If you don't like Batman, that's fine. Me, I'm not such a big Batman fan, so I think, what would Wonder Woman eat? I know, this sounds really corny. Here's what they did. They took kids at a camp, and we said, here we go. We're taking you out to a fast food place, and you can have either French fries or apple slices. What would you like? Right, you're laughing, right? Hey, the first week, 98% of them ordered French fries, and 2% of them ordered apple slices. But the next week when they took them out, instead of just saying, hey, what do you want? We said to them, what would Batman want? And then after they answered for Batman, we asked them what they wanted. And this time, half of the group ordered apple slices, and half of the group stuck with their French fries. They did this in a bunch of different ways. And what really impressed them was, it doesn't matter what you say. You can say the Batman. You can say Wonder Woman. You can say your best friend. You can say somebody you love who isn't with you anymore. It really doesn't matter who you say. And you know what else? It doesn't matter what you answer. Like, you can game it. You can say, Batman would choose French fries. Batman loves French fries. It really doesn't matter, because you're still going to improve your choice by answering for somebody else first. And now, I personally think that this is a really excellent trick for women, because we are so used to asking ourselves, what would our child want? What would our spouse want? What would somebody else want? And choosing the healthy answer for them. So just ask yourself first before you buy whatever that is, what would so-and-so want, and see what happens. All right. Here's another one. Also seems kind of on the hokey level, but you know what? Sometimes hokey is what works. What is the right amount of fruits and vegetables to put into your shopping cart? In most shopping carts, we found that fruits and vegetables take up about 24% of the cart. But when we put a piece of yellow tape across the middle of the interior of the shopping cart and said that you had to put all the fruits and vegetables in front of the tape and all the other foods in back, well, what happened was that the shoppers bought 23% more fruits and vegetables. They spent about twice as much on produce, and they spent 25% more time at the store, mostly in the produce section, looking stuff over. So, all right, you're not going to go to your shopping mall and, like, with your tape and tape a piece across your cart, but you could put your scarf across there, or your coat across there, or you could even just mentally imagine a halfway line and say, ahead of that line, it's fruits and vegetables, and behind it, anything else I want to put in there. If the target space isn't full, go back to the produce aisle and get some more. All right. The next one is called chewing your way through the supermarket. Now, most of us know that you do not want to go shopping when you are hungry. we've all been told that we're just going to buy more food when we're hungry. But in fact, when we studied it, we found that shoppers who were really hungry did not buy more food. In fact, they bought the same amount of food as people who were already full, but they bought much worse food. When we're hungry, we buy the four C's: crackers, chips, cereal, and candy. Imagination is the problem. Hunger leads us to think about what the food would feel like if we were eating it and how fast we can eat it. So we tested whether or not chewing gum could interrupt that. We gave gum to food shoppers at the start of their shopping trips, and at the end, they rated themselves as less hungry and less tempted by food. In fact, shoppers bought 7% less junk food when they chewed a piece of gum while they were shopping. So, first stop in the supermarket is some gum. Chew on it, and you actually might find yourself making better choices. I really liked this one. They were working with a man who was, as he and his doctor put it, addicted to a particular soft drink. In fact, he was drinking 12 to 14 cans of soda pop on a daily basis. And his doctor says this man is on the express train to diabetes. He even had a mini refrigerator in his office, which was stocked with, you're right, the soft drink of his choice. All he had to do was stretch out his hand, and he could grab one, telling him to get rid of his refrigerator, telling him to go cold turkey, telling him to drink less. It just wouldn't work. We knew it. So instead, we told him that he could drink all the soda he wanted if he agreed to keep only one can in the refrigerator at a time. We, in fact, made him decide how badly he wanted to drink a warm, soft drink. Almost immediately, he was able to trim his consumption down to 4 or 5 a day. And then he was able to bring it down further because he wasn't so addicted anymore. Isn't that an interesting way to do it? Just find some way to make it perhaps not quite so attractive. A trick that one of my friends has is, rather than pay the expense of buying the little bags of chips, she buys the big bag of chips, but the first thing she does when she gets home is she takes 6 or 7 Ziploc bags, and she divides that big bag into 6 or 7 bags, and that's it. She's allowed to have only one bag per day. That way, she says, she gets the satisfaction of getting to the bottom of the bag without eating very much at all. The case for half-size portions, they found that people actually eat a better balanced meal when they eat out if they share the entree with someone else. Entrees tend to be so big that we don't have salad, and then we're kind of pushed to have dessert. So by sharing a meal, you're probably more likely to have an appetizer and a salad, and then to share your dessert as well. That is a great trick. What's going on in the slim person's kitchen? The food is hidden. I know. It seems too obvious, doesn't it? But if food is out, we're going to eat it. And if it's hidden, it isn't. In fact, we found that in kitchens where one box of breakfast cereal was visible, the women weighed 21 pounds more than those who did not have a box of food visible in their kitchen. This is Susan Weed at HealthyLife.net. I'll be right back with some fascinating facts about ginger.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Ginger. Where did ginger come from? Well, the myths say that ginger came from the Garden of Eden. Ginger is a herb so familiar that I don't have to tell you anything about it. You already know about ginger, and you probably like ginger. I have a wonderful book here from the Herb Library, which is called Ginger. Oh, my goodness. Now, not that many plants have had an entire book written about them. And this wonderful book takes us through all of the vast history of ginger. It is, of course, a tropical plant, and a plant that needs a lot of rainfall. Even in the tropics, the soil has to be taken care of because ginger likes a really, really rich soil. Ginger, of course, was an important item of trade, and all kinds of wonderful things ascribed to it. I also have a wonderful book by Suzanne Poth and Gina Sauer called The Spice Lilies, Healing with Ginger, Turmeric, Cardamom, and Galangal. Now, just as you know ginger and say, oh yeah, she's talking about ginger, you may know turmeric or not. The reason you may know it is it's gotten quite a lot of publicity as an herbal medicine to reduce inflammation and especially to reduce heart disease. And it is yellow. It's found in curry. It's what makes curry powder yellow. Some of you, certainly far fewer of you, will have heard of cardamom, especially as we move into the holiday season, because cardamom is sometimes used in holiday dishes. But very few of you Americans will have heard of galangal. Galangal is a very interesting root, again, used in the tropical areas of the world. And all of these plants are in the same plant family and are used quite similarly, but we are going to focus in on ginger. There are so many different ways to use ginger. We can get candy that is ginger. We can get ginger ice cream. We can get candied ginger. We can get fresh ginger in the supermarket, and we can put it in our food. We can make a tea of fresh ginger. We can make a tea of dried ginger. We can get dried ginger in the supermarket, too. We can make a tincture of fresh ginger. We can make a vinegar of fresh ginger. We can make a honey of fresh ginger. And we can even make an oil of fresh ginger. Powdered ginger can be used to make tea. It can be put in food. And it also can be put in capsules. Ginger is one herb that seems to be reasonably safe and reasonably effective when taken in capsules. And as one of the primary reasons that people take ginger is to quell nausea and vomiting, it often makes sense for them to take it in capsules. I'm thinking about very early on when I was working with herbs and pregnant women, and a woman got in touch with me and she said, oh, I know you're writing a book about herbs and pregnancy, and I want to tell you the story about my daughter, because my daughter, when she was pregnant, she was so morning sick. Well, not even morning sick. She was morning, noon, and night sick. She just threw up. She said, I thought I was going to lose my daughter. I thought she was going to die. She couldn't eat anything, she said, and so I researched this topic, and what I came up with was ginger. She said, so I gave her a cup of ginger tea, and all she did was just throw up the ginger tea all over. So I did a little more research, and I decided that it would be safe to give her ginger in capsules. Interestingly enough, the United States, the Food and Drug Administration, and most westernized countries do consider ginger safe enough to be taken in capsules during pregnancy. The only country that disagrees is Germany. And Germany says we don't really know enough about the effects of ginger on the embryo to be able to say that it's effective. So she gave her daughter ginger in capsules, and she gave her a couple of capsules, and her daughter felt a little better, and then she gave her 4 or 5 capsules, and her daughter definitely felt better. And she just kept raising the dose until her daughter was no longer nauseated or vomiting, and that was, believe it or not, 30 ginger capsules a day. And when she tried to lower the dose, her daughter got sick again. And so she was writing to tell me that her daughter had had a perfectly normal, perfectly healthy child after taking what almost anyone would consider a really outrageous amount of ginger, but that it really got her through and allowed her to be okay. Not just morning sickness, car sickness, sea sickness, space sickness. Believe me, if you think seasick is bad, how bad being in a space capsule? At least if you're on a boat, you can look at the horizon and there's something to look at. Up in space, there is nothing to look at. And the vestibular system goes really wackety. Nausea and vomiting from chemotherapy. Gallbladder pain. Nausea and vomiting after anesthesia. Garlic is warming, and frequently the operating theater is cold and people are chilled down, sometimes even iced down. So ginger in capsules or candied ginger, they have tried it both ways. They've tried giving people ginger capsules before the surgery, although many people say nothing orally, but in studies they do it and they found tremendous results, or as soon as the person can't take anything orally after the surgery, a cup of ginger tea, or one of my favorite is after surgery lozenges, which is slippery elm powder, ginger powder, and honey mixed together and then slowly sucked on. It is said that ginger opens new pathways for energy. It is calming to the digestive system. It relaxes the muscles and the blood vessels throughout the digestive system. It's really wonderful for people who have nervous indigestion, who just get so wound up that they can't seem to digest their food. Ginger inhibits COX enzymes. And that's what aspirin does as well. So in some circles, ginger is said to be very much like aspirin in that it reduces the risk of heart attack, it reduces inflammation throughout the body, and it relieves pain and tenderness throughout the body as well. Ginger warms the heart and is the companion to those who are mourning and who feel exhausted. We might think of this situation as being depressed, but ginger doesn't. I'll be right back here with you at HealthyLife.net to tell you more about ginger.
What makes us different? You. Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.
Green blessings. This is Susan Weed here with you at HealthyLife.net. The Spice Lilies says that the home of wild ginger is Malaysia, but that even by the time of the classical Greeks and Romans, ginger was known to them, as well as people in Egypt, Akkad, and Sumer. The Chinese herbalists of at least 3,000 years ago used a lot of different herbs, many of which they still use today. And one of the most famous of the Chinese emperors, who was an herbalist, who was said to have lived over 5,000 years ago, divided plants into three groups. The helper drugs, which were prescribed carefully and only in the case of acute illness. The minister drug, which were drugs that could have some negative side effects and are generally prescribed to ameliorate nutritional deficiency. And the ruler drugs. The ruler drugs are drugs that could never hurt, could never be toxic, and nurtured the life force itself. The spice lilies, but especially ginger, turmeric, and galangal were considered some of the best of the ruler drugs. Now, although I am telling you all of these wonderful things about ginger, I will admit to you that I do not use much ginger internally. I certainly don't use it a lot in my food. I might make fried rice and grate some ginger into it. It's certainly true. But I don't use it a lot. So I was quite happy to find that the abbot and healing expert Hildegard von Bingen, who lived 1,000 years ago, did indeed know about ginger. She said that it stimulated the appetite, was useful for treating eye ailments, and could relieve stomach colic, but she discouraged healthy, well-fed people from eating ginger. She says it tends to make people lazy, clumsy, and forgetful. That ginger increased the worst tendencies in people and could destroy their reason. Quite the put down from Hildegard of Bingen there. I do, however, use garlic externally. Now, I mentioned just before that in my book, breast cancer, question mark, breast health, exclamation point. There is a recipe for an after-surgery lozenge that helps you after any kind of surgery. And there is also a recipe there for making a ginger compress. And this is one of the classics of herbal medicine, is a ginger compress or a ginger bath or a ginger soak. And those are used to treat varicose veins, sprains, strains, sinusitis, menses pain, arthritis, back pain, to help stimulate circulation, to ease muscle pain as well as joint pain, and to relieve exhaustion and deep tiredness. Ginger oil can also be used in these situations. Do be aware that some people have a mild skin sensitivity to ginger. And before you plunk somebody down in a ginger bath, just do a little test. Put some of the ginger tea in the inside crook of their elbow and then hang out for half an hour or so. Make sure that they're not going to be reactive to the ginger. And a ginger oil massage is used in certain areas to stimulate circulation. And especially to increase the circulation to the stomach and to the digestive organs. In fact, it has been found that ginger can increase the amount of enzymes that the digestive organs make, making it much easier for the body to digest food. There are over 40 different pharmaceutical actions that ginger is known to exhibit. The primary among them is anti-emetic, which we just talked about. Alright, ginger prevents and cures nausea and vomiting from virtually any reason. It is antispasmodic. Ginger reduces involuntary spasms in muscles, including hiccups, the great hiccup remedy. Ginger is a carminative. The verb, Latin verb to sing is carmen, and a carminative either stops you from singing or makes you sing, depending on who you listen to. And that means that it cures flatulence and gas, relieving indigestion as well. Ginger is an antiseptic. It controls and can even prevent bacterial infections. As we were mentioning, a ginger bath is an incredible circulatory stimulant, improving blood flow throughout the entire body, especially thought of when there's deep congestion in the chest or when there are heart problems, because ginger has such a profound effect on the upper part of the body. Ginger is a diaphoretic. A cup of very hot ginger tea will almost always make anyone at all sweat. It is an expectorant. It causes coughing to be productive. In other words, instead of the cough just being suddenly the cough is rah, actually bringing things up. And ginger is a peripheral vasodilator. In other words, it dilates blood vessels in the extremities. One of the sweetest uses that I saw for a ginger was for the person who has perpetual cold hands and feet. And they suggested that you eat hot cereal in the morning and that you grate some fresh ginger in it. Oh, my goodness. I have so much more to tell you about ginger, but we are all out of time. That wraps up another show here at HealthyLife.net. I want to thank you once more for opening your minds, your ears, and your hearts to me and to the wise woman way of healing by nourishing. There are some interesting things about ginger, and one of the most interesting is that it's far more medicinal when it's cooked. So be sure you cook your ginger. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition, wishing you green blessings until we meet again at HealthyLife.net. Thank you for helping me reclaim herbal medicine as people's medicine. It's the medicine that's right outside your door.